Good evening. I'm been looking forward to coming here now for, I think since about August. And I won't say what my protest was either, but it was legitimate and ignored. I am married to my wonderful wife for 25 years now. And when I married her, she had a little girl that was 7. And so for years, I have enjoyed people ask me how old I am, and if I'm married, and I say, and you know, it doesn't matter, but say back a while ago, it probably meant more. If we were married 10 years, I'd say I'm married 10 years, and they'd ask how many children, and I'd say, you know, whatever we had at the time, and wondered how old my oldest one was, and I'd say, well, she's 17. And they would look at me and look at my wife, and they'd say, well, you guys aren't supposed to do that, are you? And so had a lot of fun with that. But my oldest daughter, Sarah, came with the deal. And after that, we adopted 5 children, Kendra, Diego, Alex, Felix, and Ariana. And when they got a little older, they said, this adoption thing is so much fun. We'd like to do it, and we'd like to help. And we said, okay, we'll do that. And so we were still certified to adopt, and we took in 2 more little girls, Mary and Lisa. And that was 8 children. That was a pretty big load. And when we were dating, I'd tease my wife that someday I want to have a set of twins. I wanted to have the set of twins because I'm fundamentally production oriented, and I like to be efficient, and I just figured that would be the quickest way to get to a big family, and we'd get it done, and we could go whatever you do when you're done, and it's just twice the work in half the amount of time is all it is. So I was wrong, but one day the state called and they said, hey, there's a set of twins in the hospital at Oregon Health University. They were born 2 months premature, and they have a lot of trouble, but you guys are next of kin because you've adopted their siblings, and would you take them? So we did. We got a set of twins, and so my three youngest are with us tonight, and that's a little bit of the background of our family. So when Lee called and said and gave me the title, or text and gave the title, it was on the topic of compassion and caring for the less fortunate. And I presume the reason that I was asked had to do with our adoption story and maybe something to do with our journey with HIV. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about caring for the less fortunate and what does that really mean? I was thinking about compassion. What does that really mean? You know, Lee talked about compassion already a little bit, but my mind went down the word, the aspect or the view of the word compassion is a companion in a ship. So we, if you're in a ship, you're always going somewhere, and there's something dangerous between you and where you're going, and there's often something dangerous between you and where you left. And you really can't be and run in a ship alone. You have to have people in the ship with you. We can't run a ship. So being in a ship together, you know, if you're going to be in a ship with anybody, with a human, that person is going to that person is going to have a story. They're going to have been traumatized. They're going to have pain that they've experienced, and pain, and people who are hurt, being hurt, have been hurt, hurt other people. So if you're going to be in a ship with another human being, you're going to be hurt. And they're going to be hurt, traumatized. And how do we deal with that? How do we care for that when we're hurt ourselves? I think that's where my mind went. I've given our adoption stories several times through the years, And they really came from a series that I did over the course of, I think it was a year, maybe it was 2 years, where I went through the Bible and I did a talk on every person in the Bible who's been adopted. And my wife said I shouldn't say the word adopted too much because it's not about adoption, it's about caring for the less fortunate. I use it as shorthand because for me, adoption means so many things that I don't want to have to say the whole four sentences every time. But adoption, as we're going to discuss it this weekend, is it means somebody has had a loss. God's plan has been, his original plan, the way he laid it out, has been broken. Something bad has happened. There's been a loss. Those losses are always traumatic. And there's going to need to be redemption. And in an adoption that has successfully happened, the traumatized individual that chooses to adopt and the traumatized person that has been adopted choose God's plan for their life, the redemption plan, choose to let go of the pain, choose to embrace God's redemption plan, and accept that, and go out and live a fulfilled life. And a failed adoption is when somebody has an opportunity to help and doesn't, and when somebody has the opportunity to be helped and then chooses instead to blame, probably justly, because if they need to be adopted, they probably have plenty of blame, chooses instead to blame others and to live in despair. So when I say adoption, I mean all that stuff. So I might have to say that a couple more times so it sinks home, but that's why I use that word. This weekend, we want to hone our skills together and our abilities to really see each other. We want to really work at that. You know, when I look at the outside of you, it's a pretty beautiful crowd, a lot of lovely people. And what I see is important. But there's another piece of you, and there's another piece of me that you can't see, and that's what's on the inside. That's also important. Who are you? Who am I? And if God put us on this globe together, why? Why did he? When I look at you, I'm impressed with this thought that when you were born, you were made in God's image. There's something about all the men here, all the boys. I see an image of God that reflecting the masculine side of God. And all you ladies, when I look at you, beautiful ladies, I see the feminine side of God. I see something baked into the cake that is the image of God. And I see another piece of this. The second piece of this is we're all given an opportunity at some point in our life to choose. We're given an opportunity to choose whether or not we want to serve God. And most of us with our good Amish Mennonite backgrounds like to play ball or volleyball. And I like to think about it, at some point we chose to be on God's team. He chose us when he sent his son to die for us, and we have the opportunity, and we either choose to be on his team or not. And when we start on his team, we're not really very good ball players. We probably go out every time we're up, and somebody has to teach us how to hold the bat, how to serve the ball. You know, over time, over a lifetime, we play of practicing, of pushing against that. We get better and better at it until we're useful players. We're on the team, and we're getting something done. in our heritage over the years, that learning to be good players on God's team, that word is sanctification. So God takes us and he sanctifies us. He helps us to get better at what we do. And that is what we're going to try to do tonight. We're going to try to get a little better at being compassionate and caring for the less fortunate. The format I want to use is I'm going to try to talk fast and get through my part and get to the fun part, whereas I think you have small groups already laid out in your church, and we're going to break up into those small groups. And I have a question that we want to work at tonight. I'm going to say the question now, and then when we get to our small groups, we'll work on this question together. So I'll give the title so it makes a little more sense. What we want to work at tonight is the idea of undeserved suffering. And we're going to go over the story of Joseph. So when you think about Joseph and you think about the suffering that he experienced and how he didn't deserve it. He's one of the few people in the Bible who the Bible doesn't have one bad story about Joseph. There's nothing bad about him. And yet he suffered tremendously. So the question we want to wrestle with in our small groups is, tell of a time when you suffered unjustly or caused someone to suffer unjustly. Why? And then how did you get to where you could receive help from that situation? So tell of a time when you suffered unjustly or caused someone to suffer unjustly, and then workshop about how that has helped you in your journey. I'll give that question again when we get to it. Romans 8:15 says, "For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father." When you think about adoption, when I think about adoption, of course, I've been so involved in it for so many years that I can geek out pretty far on the idea and what's deep in there. But there's something to think about, and I'm sure you all know it, is the only way into the kingdom of heaven is through adoption. So there's something about this that we should know and we should understand. You know, all of us here tonight everybody here tonight has three dimensions of a mom and three dimensions of a dad, and they're important dimensions. So remember this. There's your biological dad or mom. And that's where you get your hair color and your nose and your height from that. And then there's the legal dad, the dad that your mom was married to or was legally connected with when you were born. And then there's the engaged dad. And that's the dad who chose to raise you, to meet your everyday need, who was there when you came home from school and when you needed a dad, was there for you. That's the three dimensions of a parent, and that's the same for a mother, those same three things. And the last one, the engaged dad, that's something that we all share. We all share that. Sometimes it's our biological dad, actually, and sometimes it's not. But that's really the only dad that actually matters. is the engaged dad. Your biological dad matters in some sense, I guess, if it matters how tall you are. I think Abraham Lincoln said, as long as your legs are long enough to touch the ground, then that's tall enough. So I guess that's how much your biological dad matters, as long as he gave you legs long enough to reach the ground. But the dad who is engaged in your life, who has compassion on you, and who cares for you when you need to be cared for, that's the dad we want to talk about, the dad and mom we want to talk about tonight. If you want to turn in Genesis to the story of Joseph, I kind of have it all tore up here. I'll just tell you the story. You know the story of Joseph. So one night Joseph had a dream. And then it says, and one night Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. "Listen to this dream," he said. "We were out in a field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up, and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before me." His brothers responded, "So you think you will be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Soon Joseph had another dream, and again he told his brothers about it. "Listen, I have had another dream," he said. "The sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me." This time he told the dream to his father as well as to his brothers, but his father scolded him. "What kind of dream is that?" he asked. "Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you?" But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dreams meant. Now remember, tonight we're talking about undeserved suffering. Soon after this, Joseph's brothers went to pasture their father's flocks at Shechem. When they had been gone for some time, Jacob said to Joseph, "Your brothers are pasturing the sheep at Shechem. Get ready, and I will send you to them." "I am ready to go," Joseph replied. And it's just a short time later, if you read in there, we get to the last part of Genesis, and Joseph and his brothers have buried their father. It's a lifetime for Joseph, but a short time for us to read that. And dad is dead, and he's in the grave, and the brothers are scared. And they deserve to be scared. Joseph is, in fact, the second in command of the most powerful nation on earth at the time. His word is law, and he can settle up the score. They know their conscience has been bothering these boys for their entire life. They know they've carried this guilt with them. They know that someday they're going to have to pay. They know it. They owe a debt. They realize it. And so they went to Joseph and they said, "Hey, Joseph, remember before Dad died, he said, please forgive your brothers. Don't hold it against them. We're terrible sorry. We know Dad's gone, but Joseph, don't forget what he said." And then Joseph says in verse 19, he says, "But Joseph said, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I will continue to take care of you and your children." So he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. If you've got a hard heart, it's probably the only way this doesn't touch you emotionally. You know, look what he forgave in those words. Look at the debt Joseph forgave. Why? Why did he forgive that? He had all those years that he'd been wronged. Did you ever stop and try to imagine what it would have been like to be Joseph? You know, just the little brother kind of banged around by the big brothers and having crazy dreams. Like, who wants to have a dream like that? And if you did, you want to talk to people about it. And if you talk to them and then they say, they take your dream personal. If you think about him, I can just kind of imagine him on the, you know, in the golden deserts of Israel. Just trying to figure out life. Like, what's going on with me? Why am I so weird? What's going on with me? And somewhere in his life, we don't know. We do not know, but somewhere, and it probably was before he got shipped to Egypt, somewhere he decided to accept this responsibility and embrace it. Because he never faltered. He didn't falter under pressures that young men today falter on, a lot less pressure. I'll just say that. And he didn't have, he was alone. Nobody knew. Nobody would have cared. He was alone, and yet he stood for what was right. Undeserved suffering stands out, is the dimension of Joseph's life I want to look at tonight. So here's one of our personal stories, and this is actually a story of my oldest daughter, Sarah. And so I wrote this story, and I'll give it here tonight. When Sarah was 5 years old, I met her mother, and we started a serious relationship together. And for me, that meant that I learned how to date and seriously try to figure out what it's like to live with a wife and be a dad at the same time. I lived in Oregon and Gina lived in Missouri, and so we had a long distance courtship. And I remember one of our first dates that I went back there to Missouri for. We took Sarah to the Kansas City Zoo. And I was a very earnest and determined young boyfriend and dad, and or whatever you call me to be. And I was more earnest than I was smart. And this little girl didn't know me. She was 5 years old and didn't really know me. And so I had made a choice that I was going to take her under my wing and like her. And somewhere in the middle of the zoo, she got tired and wanted to be carried. And of course, Gina was along, and my mother-in-law to be was along, and I forget who else was along. And I just picked her up and proceeded to try to carry her. And she threw a royal fit, kind of like the little girl this evening. She did not want to be with me. And I picked her up and kind of squished her down, and things went from bad to terrible. And fortunately, my mother-in-law-to-be, Elizabeth, was there, and she picked Sarah up and said, you might have to just let me do this. And things calmed right down. I think that was my first lesson into it takes time to build relationships. You cannot force relationship. And if you force relationship, there's not really winners. There's just survivors. There's a reason it's 9 months from conception till a baby is born. First, mom has to get used to the idea and accept it, and then dad has to get used to the idea and accept it, and maybe siblings do, or parents. And you know, by the time the baby gets here, everybody's pretty excited and pretty ready for it to be here. But that's often not the very first reaction. Be gentle about that reality when you're dealing with hurting people. It takes time to build relationships. They don't just, I'm not just instantly dad. I can choose to be, but I'm not. I've heard some very amazing things through the years about adoption, but maybe the most amazing is, I don't know if I can ever love someone who's not related to me biologically. It's kind of interesting because very few couples are actually related biologically. And many of them have good, sound, loving relationships. You know, marriage is an adoption that a lot of us have been privileged to take part in. Because remember, adoption is a choice. Well, there came a time after we were married. Sarah was, my wife is HIV positive, and Sarah, through that whole situation, was HIV positive. And when we got married, there was quite a bit of blowback in our home community. And when we got married and we got home from our honeymoon, Sarah was 7 years old, and we got married in May, and in June, the church was having summer Bible school. And we got an invitation in the mail. It wasn't my church, it was a sister church in the same fellowship that was actually closer to where we lived than where we went to church, and we got an invitation to that summer Bible school in the mail. And never once thought anything about it, and Sarah was planning to go to Bible school, summer Bible school. And on Saturday afternoon, I got a phone call from someone who is now, well, he's dead now, but who later in life became a very dear friend. But at the time, he called and said, we heard, you know, congratulations, you're getting married and that you have, but we heard you have a little daughter, Sarah, and that you're thinking about sending her to summer Bible school. And I said, yeah, she's planning to come. And he said, well, the board isn't comfortable with her coming because of the disease that she has, and she's not allowed to come to summer Bible school. And, you know, now that we've had COVID, you might understand a little more what maybe went through my mind. You know, people are more important than a disease. Like, it's just how, I don't care if you die. That's not how we treat each other. But that was a very hard afternoon and evening. And my dad came over, and my mom and dad came over, and we were kind of quietly there for a while. And dad said to us, these are God's people that are doing this. They're sinning right now. This is wrong. What they're saying is wrong. But give them grace. And give them grace, and we'll and give it to God, and give grace, and who knows what might come out of it. And that was one of those times, you know, the undeserved suffering. Now, I could take it. I was 26 years old and big and strong, but why a little girl? Like, why do you have to pick on somebody your own size? And the next day was Sunday, and instead of going to church, there was a woods behind our place and a creek, and I spent the Sunday morning walking the fields and by the creek. And the words of Peter kept going through my mind when Jesus said to him, well, Peter, are you going to leave too? And he said, well, where would I go? Here, this is where the words of life, this is where I hear the words of life. You know, I was a sinner, and at this church, this very church, I gave my life to the Lord, and in a very meaningful way, and I got some sin in my life that I had taken care of. I love this church. I love that particular church, and man, this hurt. This was tough. And so what to do? Well, there's an old man in this church who is, he's older than my dad, and he's got a real heart for people, and he's got a heart for children, and he called us up, after that, sometime that week, and he said, hey, I want you to bring your daughter and your wife, and I want you to come over. I got my grandchildren here. We're going to have a party for Sarah. And he went to the same church, and he wasn't anything critical. And so I went over this with my wife, so I'm not supposed to cry when I do this, but it still hits me, so I'll get through it. But he said, I want you to come over. So we went over there for a party. And, you know, it's HIV, and people were scared legitimately. Some were just mad. But he had a barbecue on his backyard propane grill, and he had a bunch of hot dogs, and he just turned all those hot dogs with his hands. There wasn't any trying to be safe or careful or any of that. And he gave Sarah a hot dog in a bun. Such a simple little thing. And you know, that's a lot of barbecues ago for us and them. But now Sarah grew up, and she's 32, gonna have children. But what's funny about her, I mean, she's expecting a set of twins. What's interesting about her is she loves the church, and she's the minister's wife there, but she's got kind of a funny personality, and that is, she's pretty easy to get to know. And if you really get to know her and you got a problem, she's somebody that you'll probably tell your problem to. And she's got 3 barbecues out back. And if you really get to know her and you need help, you go to her place, it's very likely she'll put a hot dog in a bun for you. And I think of undeserved suffering. The miracle isn't that people get it wrong. The miracle is that any of us ever get it right. That's the actual miracle. So tonight, when you get in your small group, if there's something that's something in your life, some piece or story, that people, you want to let people get to know you a little better. And so what we do in these small groups is we take our question. So the question that maybe you can think of the time in your life when you suffered unjustly or some unjust suffering. It's there in your head and you want to talk about it. Maybe it happened to you personally, or maybe like me it was to somebody I love close to. And you want to talk about it and workshop that with someone. Well, let's do that this evening in your small group. And what I like to do is go around and everybody tell their story, what comes to your mind. Whatever it is, there's some unjust suffering that very likely will trigger with you. Go around and each person tell what that might be, and then go around the small group again and just workshop that. See, how can that be a blessing to you? Why would God have let it happen to you? Why did he let it happen to Joseph? Why did he let it happen to Sarah? Why? Well, let's talk about it. Maybe there's some redemption story in there that we can get a hold of and workshop that together. And hopefully, we'll do this, I think we'll do this tomorrow night and Sunday night, and hopefully, as we workshop these problems, you'll find an answer for something. Something can maybe shift in your life, in our life, and we can go out and make the world a little better place, because, you know, it was meant for evil, but God redeemed it. That's what we're looking for, redemption. Some things to think about. The suffering of the innocent is especially poignant. It may take years before God's plan is revealed. We might not know yet. We think if it's not 7G internet coming from Starlink with a McDonald's burger included, it's slow. You know, God, all day is 1,000 years. God, another thing to think about is God takes care of vengeance. He knows the darkest humanity in all of us. We don't need to be part of the consequences for somebody's choices. We don't need to take care. I didn't need to take care of any of those people in my churches. You know, one after another, as the years would roll by, I'd get a phone call or somebody'd stop me at church and they'd say, "We were wrong. What we did was wrong, and we're sorry. Will you forgive us?" And you have to be in a place to accept that forgiveness. I don't want to die with that on my hands. I'm glad to be free. And something else to really think about, and think about this for yourself too. Include yourself in this. What we consider lost, broken, and thrown away just may be something God is growing into, using and growing and building into something we may depend on someday. So just because we're out of time and just because we're done and throw it away doesn't mean God is. Okay, I think we'll pray. And then if you want to come help me break up into the small groups. Shall we stand or kneel? All right, let's stand for prayer. Thank you, Lord, this evening for your church. Thank you for the Bible. Thank you for the stories of Joseph and the stories in our own life. And the fact that in 2025 you still care about your church and you're here tonight loving us and empowering us to walk forward with you. Thank you for this community, their invitation to us. Tonight, Lord, we want to be real honest with each other in a safe place and talk about real issues with each other. And Lord, if there's anyone here tonight that needs your courage and your strength and your empowerment, a vision of wholeness that comes from you, just help that to come through. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.